Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and hello. I'm Kay Thompson, and welcome to, excuse me, the Kay and Gus Show. My voice is probably an octave lower because of the fact that, a little bit of hoarse. A little hoarse because of the weather and having a cold and getting over it and all that kind of thing. We are going to be going into part two of the Central Park Jocker case. You know, we talked to Anna Phillips, the reporter I was telling you about, the producer of a number of things at CBS and ABC, and we had a very successful show last week because of the fact that Anna had lived this story. She was the one who had covered the story, and she was able to represent, one young man, represent me, that she went to see him, Corey. I forget Corey's last name, but Anna's going to be telling us about it. And joining us today is going to be Wilfredo Benitez, attorney Wilfredo Benitez, and also Junius Williams, attorney in Newark, and we're going to continue with Anna Phillips as soon as we can get her on the air. So shall we go to the first caller? You're on the air. Let's see. Hello, you're on the air. Is that Anna?
Well, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Anna Phillips, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine. We are on the Kay and Gus Show, and of course, Gus is no longer with us, but he is here in spirit. And, Anna, what I'm going to be doing is changing the name of the show. I had to do it when I had to do it. So, and I think I may be ready to do this at this particular point, although he is here in spirit. And I want to tell you and the rest of the people that this is GoPro Radio Networks, everyone, and we are the Food Information Education and Global Communications Network. And how do we do this? How do we get this information? Constant research. We have people calling us and participating in our news sources and contacts from all over the world. Globally, Anna, how about those folks? We're heard globally.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
We are heard globally. We're not only locally and national, but we are also globally. We're heard all over. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay. Waiting for Junius Williams to call in. Waiting for Wilfredo Benitez, two attorneys, to call in also. But let's continue with what I think we had. I know we had talked about the Central Park Jocker case, but was there anything that we hadn't talked to last week that you want to add to before we go into this other thing?
Well, it's still shocking to me how they have not redressed the situation and, compensated these young men for their time that they spent in jail.
What is the present status of that?
Well, right now, it's being held up and it's going, traveling through the courts at a snail's pace. Mm-hmm. And just recently, the DA's office has attempted to get Ken Burns' material. Subpoenaed him for his material.
Mm-hmm.
So that this will drag on for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile,
these children, almost 40 years old.
Oh, my goodness. And they have spent how many years in jail? For
Corey Weiss spelled the top for 13 years for Corey Weiss, and almost 13 years for the rest of them as well.
And the NYPD knew that they did not commit this crime at the onset. Is that right?
Well, they certainly had no evidence to they built the case with only circumstantial evidence.
Mm.
The evidence that they did have was DNA, and it wasn't from any of the young men that participated. They had absolutely no evidence and coerced confessions.
Yeah.
And railroaded parents.
Mm.
So, nothing.
Was there any indication, I'm trying to remember all the information, because I was on the air at the WLIB at that time, and a friend of mine is listening in right now. I remember Carol Moore. She has broadcast Brownstone Digital, their network, and she was also on the air at that time. So a number of us, were really outraged, absolutely outraged. Why did, or how did the NYPD persons happen to get these five young men anyway in the position that they're presently in?
Well, they were in a park, and there was a bunch of kids in the park, maybe 30. The number that I hear was 30. And they were pressed to solve this crime. They were pushed to have the conviction. The victim was the epitome of New York success story. And they were pushed to, and the parents were ignorant of the law, and, you know, they didn't have attorneys with them. They didn't know how to make this thing stop, make that train not leave the station.
Yeah. They didn't have
any. They were railroaded.
They were railroaded. They were
railroaded.
And there were five of them or six? I don't remember.
Five.
Mm-hmm. Five young men. And they, what were their ages at that time?
They ranged from, you know, I don't recall, but I'm not sure if any of them were juveniles. Yeah. You know, because like I said, I didn't come into the case at that time. I didn't cover the actual case. I covered from the moment that we found Mateus Reyes and we had the exclusive interview with him.
Now,
so that our interview would change that case, would turn that case around.
Now tell people who Mateus Reyes is.
Mateus Reyes was the actual rapist. Mm-hmm. He was a young man who had been arrested maybe 3 months after the case, the Central Park Chicago rape happened. There was a rash of rapes in the West Side, Manhattan, and Mateus was convicted of three of them, one ending in a murder. Mm-hmm. He actually murdered the mother of two children, the two children were in another room calling out for their mother, while he raped her and then later murdered her.
Was that did that happen in New York or out of the country?
Yes. That happened right in the same area, right, not far away from Central Park.
Wow.
Not far away from Central Park. He would confess shortly after the statute of limitation had expired. He claims that at that point he was a monster. And while he was serving his time in prison, that he had learned through, you know, therapy and group therapy and just maturing that he had committed a crime. And actually, there was a point at which him and Corey Wise were in the same jail at the same time together.
Really? Mm-hmm.
And actually had an altercation over TV. And in his mind, he knew that he had committed that crime and that young man that he had just had an altercation with was serving time for a crime that he knew he committed.
Uh-huh.
And so he evolved into himself. And, you know, and shortly after the statute of limitations expired, where he could not be convicted of this crime, he confessed.
Mm-hmm.
Conveniently confessed at that time.
And waited specifically for the statute of limitations, right?
Well, arguably, he claims that he, you know, had an epiphany, and it just so happened right when the statute of limitation had expired, so he couldn't be convicted of the crime. But he also, when he confessed...
We have another caller on the line, by the way. Let's have this caller join us. You're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Wilfredo Benitez. How are you doing?
Attorney Wilfredo Benitez, how are you? Meet Anna.
Good, thank you.
Okay, you want to get in on this discussion?
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Anna, you want to continue?
So he had claimed that he had had an epiphany, and that he'd confessed to this crime. And so he then, you know, confessed, and at the time, one of the DAs came down, and it wasn't when the press covered it. They didn't cover it. It was a 3-inch column article in the New York Times, buried in page whatever, you know. It certainly didn't garner the kind of coverage that the actual crime
this
did.
Article that was at the Times.
Right. It was just a small, imagine, just put your fingers up, 3-inch.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
3 inches. It said Mateus Reyes confessed, New York DA's office investigating man who's in jail who claims that he was the rapist in the Central Park Chicago rape case. The end.
But you know,
one of my colleagues saw it and pursued it.
Wilfredo?
Yeah, once Mateus confessed, and be mindful of the fact that at the time, I believe he was serving a life sentence.
33
and
years.
All of a sudden, yeah, right. All of a sudden came to his senses. But, you know, notwithstanding his statements, one of the things that I thought was interesting, and I'm, you know, recalling this incident, because I am from New York, and I grew up literally 6 blocks away from Schaumburg, you know, around the corner from that Central Park entrance. Robert Mortendorf, who was the district attorney at the time, you know, or soon thereafter, began to question, you know, the validity of the confessions, which, you know, were clearly coerced, and these guys had claimed, you know, they had retracted their confessions weeks after initially making them. And, you know, it was clear to him, at least, and I think he even may have been quoted in the Times, where he said that those confessions, you know, they were inconsistent as to the facts and as to material facts. So it's interesting that, you know, notwithstanding your statements, that, you know, Robert Mortendorf, the district attorney at the time, was kind of suspicious as to the confession. I think that, along with the DNA of Mateus, you know, helped kind of move their, you know, vacating those convictions of those, you know, poor little kids.
And Mateus Reyes, down to drawing a map, which I still have.
Wow.
Had, you know, evidence. He had, you know, conclusive evidence, unrefutable evidence. It was hard to, not to mention that his DNA
exactly.
was the only DNA, you know.
Well, you know, but when you consider that, yeah, you're right. You consider that you know, these guys have retracted their statements, and then as you indicated, I mean, well before their conviction were vacated, there was this theory out there that it was. This crime was, in fact, committed by this one person. And even after the DNA being matched to Mateus, there was still the thought, at least in the city, because I don't even think their lawsuit is yet to be settled. Even to this day, I think that there's this thought that, you know, these guys were accomplices to Mateus. You know, so there's this refusal to really, really, truly let these guys off the hook. You know, notwithstanding the DNA and the fact that these confections were, in fact, you know,
you are so right about that. I mean, it has gripped people's minds, and they simply won't let it go. They simply won't let it go. And I mentioned last week when Dateline did the interview with the actual Central Park jogger when she finally came out with her book. The first 20 minutes of the show was rehashing the case, and still identifying the five young men as the rapists.
Yeah, it's
you know,
it's,
they
it's,
rehashed
it's
the entire case without saying this was the story then.
Right.
They spent 20 minutes, you know, rehashing the story without mentioning once that, since then, the real rapist has come forward, and these convictions were vacated, and it was an afterthought. Maybe
yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, and it's that refusal, and it's that you know. I mean, listen, I have two boys, and you know, and having grown up in New York City, there's always this fear, you know, for a parent to have their like kid go on to into the world, but you consider this, you consider that at the time. I think, you know, some of them were 16, I think a couple were 14, that even before, and I can understand the victim name not being released, but it was the police, I think protocol never should release the names and addresses of alleged suspects, particularly of them if they're of minor age. In this case, even before they were indicted, even before, you know, they were even, you know, arraigned, you know, their names and their addresses and all of that were in the newspaper. And so you consider, well, could they really have gotten a fair trial in New York, which I think most people argue. In fact, their convictions were vacated. There's no way they could have. No way they could have. So, it's not surprising these guys are not admitting it even to today.
Also, not with what newspapers were doing, if I remember correctly. Remember that big ad that said Wilding? You know, they these kids are Wilding. I mean, they became
They'd even
active.
Coined the phrase.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Not knowing that Joan Locke at the
I was approached by my publisher, Hardcore Brayson Jovanovic, to write a book about Wilding. I was like, I don't know a thing about Wilding.
I can write a book about
Tawana Brawley because I covered the story, but where will I go with this new phrase that one coins called Wilding?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous because at the time, Tone Loke, I mean, remember this rapper from California? He had a song like, you know, it's the Wild Thing. And I just think, quite candidly, they just kind of ran with it because, I mean, it just seemed kind of ludicrous. But like you say, you know, I remember, you know, when you consider like the newspapers back then, like the Amsterdam News and the City Sun, those guys were all over the story. And, you know, I remember, again, having been from the city, Calvin Butt saying, you know, any time a white roommate gets raped, you know, what do? You round up a bunch of young black kids. You know what I mean? So it all reeked of just, you know, the cards were stacked against these guys. And still, even having been, you know, having their sentences vacated and still having been removed from, you know, New York City sex registry, they still, I can't imagine them having any peace because I think there's still that suspicion, that cloud of suspicion over these guys. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. That is so unjust. What redress do they have? Are they still in jail? Are some of them still in jail?
No, they were released. No, they've been out.
How long did they stay in jail before they were released?
Well, Corey Weiss, when I went to pick him up in jail, had served his entire sentence.
I think they all did, right? Yeah, I think they all did.
Yeah, and then some. Yeah. Yes, they did.
Yeah, exactly.
And as a matter of fact, Yusuf Salam left town to get a start. Anton McRae changed his name and his location. And as a matter of fact, never spoke about this again. He was so injured that he never, ever spoke of this, and the first time he'd ever been seen since it happened was when he stood on the stage for Ken Burns, the screening of the movie, and he still couldn't choke out a sentence. He can remember his father being his hero, every baseball game, everything. His father was his best friend, and then he held such a grudge against his father because while they were wearing these boys down as they were interrogating them, Dad got exhausted as well and said, go ahead and just say, just give a statement.
Oh, my God.
And
yeah.
He felt so violated by his own dad.
Mm.
And that's simply a parent's ignorance to the legal process.
But think of this, how strong Yusuf must have been because, you know, while all the other kids, and, you know, and not that they weren't strong, so, you know, but, you know, in his case, Yusuf Salam, not only did he not do a video confession, but even though he admitted it, he never signed anything. And you can imagine the pressure he must have been under. Now, you mentioned, obviously, having intimate knowledge of the situation about his father's conduct. And here's a kid who, you know, notwithstanding his submissions and clearly being coerced, you know, there was disdaining him and said, but, you know, I didn't do this. And he didn't sign that written confession. So essentially, it's to a testament, you know, to his testament.
Yeah, Yusuf's mom then became an advocate and still has an organization that assists and helps the community. And, I mean, it changed her life. And she took on the cause now.
Yeah.
Has her own organization.
Who are the other
two? Never returned to her.
Anna, who are the other two young men? Now, we have Yusuf, we have Anton, and we have Corey. Now, who are the other two?
Keith Richards.
Keith, right.
Keith Richardson.
Right.
He was his mother's older woman. We have Raymond.
Raymond Santana.
We have
Raymond
Santana. Raymond
Santana.
Right. There's Raymond Santana, Keith Richardson, Corey Wise, Yusuf Salon, and Anton McRae.
What about Keith and what about Raymond? How are they?
They are grown men. They are fine. They are, you know, I tell you, so much disdain and hate that there that the families had for the press that I was never able to penetrate the families in order to help me help them. So that I literally went about this without the support of anyone's attorneys. The parents, the only way I was able to drag them into a room for an interview, because when I say the hate for me was palpable, even though I came walking in the door and I'm about to deliver what they prayed and wanted for so long, we were about to deliver that. We were going to interview, because Mateus Reyes never spoke to anybody else but us.
Wow.
And they still would not cooperate with me. So I did a Johnny Cochran. Remember when Johnny Cochran said, all I need is one juror?
Yeah.
I don't need all 13 of them. All 12, all I need is one. Well, I told the parents, I said, okay, you don't cooperate with me, that's fine. All I need is one. All I need is one parent, and I have her. Her name is Dolores Wise, Corey Wise. Corey's mother, Corey Wise's mother, cooperated with me because her child was still in jail.
Right.
So she wouldn't even get on a plane with me. She said, oh, I don't fly any planes. I literally drove 6 hours to the prison with her in the car. I left at 5 a.m. in the morning. I had a visit, jailhouse visit with Corey. I sat across from him. He told me his story. I told him, I need you to set up a jailhouse interview here. You're the only one that can request it. And before I walked out of the door, I said, you do your part, and I'll do my part. And I promise you that you're coming out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And the jail didn't want to do the interview, wouldn't let them do it. And we pushed and we pushed, and the jail said, well, we're going to let them out. So I said, well, let me know when. And they said, we're not going to let you know when. And that's when we decided, we'll stand outside the door.
Yeah.
And I'll wait. Every day I will be outside this door. Because interestingly enough, I don't know if it was Dan Amora where he was, Auburn. There's only one exit. And so there was no way that they could sneak him out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, I'll just stand right out here on this door, and I'll wait. 2 days later, he was out.
Wow.
2 days later.
Fredo, I have to say, too, you know, I was on the air on WLIB at this time.
Right.
And I remember the extreme frustrations, you know, and pain that, you know, Anna was going through at that time.
Right, right.
Because I was in contact with you. Remember that, you know, I was trying to keep up with you, and it was just so frustrating. And, you know, divided the community. And so, you know, everybody was just so frustrated with blacks against whites, you know, so forth and so on. And this kind of thing had happened so many times.
Exactly.
And had been tainted by the Tawana Brawley story.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
No one was going to talk to me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I didn't care.
Even
I was on the side of the angels.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even when you consider how their confessions were coerced, and, I mean, you can imagine the mistrust and probably didn't want their, you know, and respectfully their words twisted or what have you, you know, what have you. But, I mean, they obviously experienced a lot, you know.
Yeah. Now, what's happening now? Are they suing the city, the state, the NYPD?
They filed a suit, I want to say in early, you know, probably in 2003 for, like, malicious prosecution, emotional distress and what have you. But as I indicated before, you know, my recollection, I hadn't seen anything where it was settled. I think to this day it hadn't been settled yet. You know, of course, racial discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And they sued the city, you know. but it had not been settled yet because, again, it's this thought that, you know, that, you know, they were property, you know, the evidence was properly vetted and these were, they had real confessions and, you know, there's this belief out there that maybe they were in cahoots with this guy, Mateus, who knows? I mean, because Mateus at the time, you know, he was 17 years old, so, you know, and at the park at the same time. So there was that thought, but my understanding is that, yes, the lawsuit was filed, but no, it had not been resolved yet. Even to this day.
You know, I want to
exactly. Michael Warren is one of the attorneys.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very respected.
I want to tell people, too, that this is the Kay and Gus show here. I'm McKay Thompson, and, of course, my partner, Gus Henneberg, is no longer with us. But people will be hearing about, you know, a number of things that are going on, to be going on in Jersey for Gus and about Gus. And as soon as we find out all that information, we will be giving it out on the air. But this particular portion of our program is called the Political Roundtable. And Eric Payne is the producer, and the people on the panel are, you know, all bona fide attorneys and knowledgeable people and experts and specialists in their field. As a matter of fact, we are waiting for a call from attorney Junius Williams, also activist attorney, as you know, Anna, and also Wilfredo, both of you know, just to get in on this so we can, you know, sort of kind of bring people up to date on what has happened in that case. A lot of people don't even know that they're out. A lot of people have not really lost interest or, you know, people just feel like, what can you do? It was a very, very frustrating period to go into. But anyway, we're going to take a break right now on Kay and Gus Show, Political Roundtable, but coming back on the air. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
I believe that the cops are racist.
From the base of the crest theory, I know you hear me. If you're out there, listen up. Yeah, I know you feel me. Do I look suspicious on this track? With the bat in it, black hoodie consciousness and black fat. Yo, a young kid was shot. It's the cry we heard. I can admit, killing was a kid. It was heartfelt. No arrest warrant. No weapons found. One eyewitness, yeah. Black body down. I can hear it now. It's the same old racist shit. Thought he had a gun. It's the same old racist shit. Confession of a trigger happy hit, man. Homicidal nature, the racist plan, burying black boys, the bloodthirsty hunger games. The face of race is white, yeah, and they got the shame. Stand your ground, the legalized lynch laws. Touch another black kid, yeah, and you touch it all.
Beyond Trayvon.
He lives in a farm.
Beyond Trayvon.
But I live around here, my house right next to yours, but I still get stares. In a world of wrongness and fights for the strongest, what's the innocent to do when the fight gets brought, kid? No way you're that scared of my hoodie. People everywhere getting snared over hoodies. Seen a couple pairs get aired by the hoodies, but they don't care, my skin's spared under hoodies.
It's time to stand up and just fight for what you believe in. I don't call it violence, I just call it self-defense. Call it black intelligence brought to you by the people. You just hit it to get it, I'm in it to make a change. Hit it to change the game, hit it to rearrange. Not a day lynching, all I leave us is pain. Knowledge is power, all I give you is brain. See, it's money, power, respect, all seems the same.
Beyond Trayvon. Beyond Trayvon.
World is so chaotic, all I witness is violence. Watching my brothers dying, they sons grow with no guidance. The truth is what I'm providing to all of those who've been blinded. Being sold as equality bullshit, I ain't buying. I'm so tired of being profiled and instantly watched posts suspiciously because of my ethnicity. Y'all so stereotypical, it's despicable. And every black male in the hood, he isn't a criminal.
This is everyday life where I'm from, it goes on. But I swear it cannot go beyond Trayvon. Because I'm wearing a hoodie, I gotta get shot. Stop by the cops, it's nothing, just Florida, something for rock. People really expect us to act civil, right? We got a black president, they're fighting for civil rights. We need to come together and unite because it's time to fight the powers. So put your fists up in the sky.
Beyond Trayvon.
He lives in the storm.
he had been white, he wouldn't have been stopped. He wouldn't have been opposed at all.
Free the ass, the mind follows with raps that kill tomorrow. I can't support it, I fought it, but somebody bought it, community caught it. Yeah, but your government taught it. And all you heard of violence, hard drugs, sex, and murder. Songs never hated artists.
Hello?
Making them strong against the wrong, what's been created. But look, many neighborhoods are still devastated. I say it. Shows underrated. I hate it when it's degraded and downgraded. Spitting copyrighted to music. Some of y'all grew up to use it. People don't dance to it, they just abuse it. Y'all say that when I say this. Injustice still goes on. Beyond Trayvon. Thank you, enemy, son, for this word to the young. You the future. Save our daughters and sons.
How do we stop it? What do we do? Sue and sue? Or what are you telling people to do? I mean, what are the powers that be? What are you telling people to do? You see, I think we all have to, you know, think about this. This is Political Roundtable, and this is, you know, the show, Kay Thompson's show, by the way. We're going to change the name. I guess I'm, you know, really, really letting you go for the time being. And, you know, yes, this will, from now on, be known as the Kay Thompson Show. Now, also, Ken Burns, the documentarian, has done so many good things. You know, he's quite a documentarian. I remember the stuff that he's doing on the Black History on the, I forget the name of the Pacific Highway. It wasn't the Pacific Highway. I'm thinking of the name of it, but I have a whole list of those tapes, you know, at home, Anna, by the way, you know, mm-hmm. from what he's teaching in the Newark School
system. Well, currently he's doing the Dust Bowl.
He's doing the Dust Bowl.
During that period of time.
Wow.
But this one is really a departure. But he was so outraged by what had happened that he took it on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
amazing, amazing. And you know, talking about your feelings, and Wilfredo, jump in here whenever you want to.
Absolutely.
Your feelings, Anna, as a woman, you know, working in this area, and coming across, I. You weren't treated very nicely by the NYPD. Okay, how did you deal with that? How did you deal with that?
In particular, well, not the NYPD as much as the, something interesting was happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Both Patricia Crowley, who writes these mystery books, she was and Linda Fairstein, who also, after she was this sex crimes prosecutor, forgive me, for the Manhattan DA's office. She had retired, and she began to write books as well.
Mm-hmm.
And she writes crime mysteries. And ABC had offered both of these authors a contract to do their books and do stories on 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And right around the time when they were about to, you know, close the deal on these contracts that they were getting with ABC News, this issue of Mateus Reyes came up. Ms. Fairstein was definitely angry with ABC and wanted us to back off of the story, and we wouldn't, and it cost her the contract. Mm-hmm. Patricia Crowley went on to do stories with us, but Linda Fairstein lost her opportunity with ABC.
Yeah.
And, of course, she wanted me fired.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course.
But I can't think of, I've been threatened to be, you know, I can't think of anyone that hasn't gone to ABC to ask me to be fired, no matter what story it is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
how did that story?
Which means that you're pretty effective.
Yeah, how did that?
Everybody wants you fired.
Yeah. How did that story affect you personally?
Well, I was determined. I was determined to redress the story. Mateus Reyes, of course, did not want to. It took months to convince him to do this story with us. Months and months of going there practically every day and coaxing him and talking to him and, you know, convincing him that this is the right way to go. And it wasn't easy to convince him, but there certainly could be made an argument when you confess, and this is the only press that you get is this 3-inch column in the New York Times. You confess it to the biggest crime of the decade, and no one is paying attention. And quite frankly, the Manhattan DA's office was definitely pushing him not to talk to us. I mean, I literally, one day I walked in to the prison, you know, I have to sign into a logbook, and I could see that Nancy Ryan and John Capers, who was the investigator, had signed in a couple of hours before we even showed up. And he would come, and we would come in, and he'd say, oh, they just left here. They're begging me not to talk to you guys.
Wow.
You know, so it was a push and pull, push and pull, push and pull. Of course they don't want you to talk to us. But if you want this situation to be redressed, then maybe you need to go public with this. You know, so it's what journalists do. We convince you to do a story, you know, to speak out. And, of course, the DA wants to nail their case down before the press comes trampling, what they call trampling on them. You know, he did it. They were angry with him, but he said, I'm going to do this one interview, and then I'm not going to talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
So even, I remember Gil Noble, Mike Warren says, can you convince him to do this for Gil Noble? And I'm like, are you kidding? He's my, you know, you're an attorney. Don't you know that we don't do that? You know, even though it's Gil Noble. And we all know Gil. We all knew Gil. But this was going to be an exclusive interview, and Gil Noble would have to do his own shilling.
Yeah.
For harm or anger with Gil. It's just the competitive nature of the media. We had the exclusive interview. It would move forward from there. It was just like Tawana Brawley. If we didn't speak to her, she never spoke to anybody else. You know, so we became the interview of record.
Yes. And I remember you had just come off of that particular story. And in fact, I remember that quite well because we found out about it. I found out about it over there at WLIB when, you know, my engineer at the time, Denise Johnson, was on. And I got a call, you know, in the, production room as I was on the air talking about something. And she said, Okay, get on the phone. Sonny Carson is here, wants to talk to you, is on the phone, rather. And I went in there, went in the control room, said, you know, well, stay with us, we'll be right back. Kay Thompson here on WLIB. I was doing Urban Notebook at the time. And went on the phone with Sonny, and then he was the one who told me, he said, Kay, I want to go on the air and talk about this, you know, the cops raped this young black female up in Wappingers Falls. And
exactly.
My response was, what, Wappinger, what? Because I had never heard of, you know, that part of New York. But then again,
with six white guys, she said, one of them being a cop who raped, maimed, defiled her, and left her for dead.
Yeah. And that was another story that was so emotional. I mean, that took that another thing to split the community. I mean, it became a national story.
Well, this was the time of racial tensions. We had just come from off of Howard Beach. New York was a hotbed of racial strife.
Who was chased across the highway? What was his name? I forgot his name.
Oh my God, I can see him because he would not give us an interview. Mary Murphy locked him in the train turnstile. Mike Griffith.
Yeah.
Lord.
Michael
and then it was the case of Yusuf Hawkins.
Exactly.
And,
right.
I remember it was so.
And Amadou Eleanor Bumpers.
Yeah,
Amadou
exactly.
Diallo.
Yeah.
Mary Carson. We could go on and on. As a matter of fact, you
we
know,
go on and on. This was the climate in New York. New York was not the New York that you know now.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't the. It was a racial hotbed.
Was it ever? Yusef Hawkins. I was so intense, angry with that I didn't even want people to call in and say anything. I just asked them to call in and say his name, you know, Yusef, with all the emotion that they felt. And, I mean, the emotion that was coming across, from people calling in and just saying his name three times. I said, don't say another word, just call his name, just say his name. And it was very emotional. And, you know, you get to the point where you hear so much of the stuff that, you just can't believe, that some people would be so cruel.
And then finally, the Howard Beach case where Charlie Hines was assigned as a special prosecutor. Mm-hmm. First time a special prosecutor was assigned to prosecute a case of a racial case, and there was a conviction. And see, that's what happened to her. I think that was October. The conviction happened in October. By November, Tawana Brawley was coming along.
Yeah.
And it was you can almost sleep it because it happened during the Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah.
So no one was really watching. And then Al Sharpton, C. Vernon Mason, and Alton Maddox would take the case.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing they did was call for a special prosecutor.
Yeah.
As a result of the case, weren't a few of them disbarred? What happened? I forgot something happened with these attorneys.
C. Vernon Mason would be disbarred.
Right.
A case that had nothing to do with Tawana Brawley.
Yeah, so you wouldn't know that. Right.
And Alton Maddox would be disbarred because he did not cooperate with the disciplinary committee. And that was in association with Tawana Brawley. And we all know that Al Sharpton would then go on to be a statesman.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's a much respected journalist.
Yeah,
he has a great show.
I don't even like to think of that time, Anna,
but
the fact that, I stayed in such a state of anger, because it seems like it was happening just about every week. And then we had, police report. And that was with Dr. Ali Al-Rahman. And Ali was head of the Guardian, the Black Police Organization. And he came in with a group of, policemen. And he was dealing with, problems that the community was having with the different agencies involved with the police department. They just weren't able to get any redress. And so it was my feeling that, I knew of a civilian review board. They had such a thing in Jersey, I think, if I remember correctly. I don't know how much they did either, But anyway, finally.
Well, now we have President Barack Obama.
Yeah.
We have a youth that have that don't even remember this time in history anymore.
Yeah, they won't.
Yeah, 89 was interesting. It was so much, like you guys were saying, it was just so much happening there.
Yeah,
amazing. That year was incredible.
It was an awful period to go through. And I was pretty new with radio, and the first time I did the show, as a matter of fact, I had a racial incident that happened to me. During that time, I remember, I think it was about the third or the fourth time I was coming, driving up to LIB to do this program, and this man pulls up behind me in one of the banks. I was waiting to cash a check or something like that, and it was a drive-in. And the person in the working at the bank wasn't fast enough for him. I'm in my car, and I wasn't moving fast enough, even though I had not, finished my business, and they hadn't opened up the thing to send whatever it was, I was gay at the time. And he got so angry that he blew his horn and blew his horn and reached out and looked out of the window. And, you know, for the first time, I heard somebody call me N-I-G-G-E-R. Now, I was already in a state of fury because of these cases, you know. And I got out of my car and said, what did you say? And he looked at me and he said it again. I said, okay. And I went over there to the, well, anyway, what I did eventually was get his number, get his license plate, complete description of the car before I went. And I was due over at LIB. But what I did was I went directly to the police station. And, you know, of course, made the complaint and whatnot. We got into court. During that time, he had written me, an apology saying that he wasn't brought up that way and da-da-da-da-da. Of course, I did my research to find out where he worked, where he lived, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, being a broadcaster at that time, being a broadcast journalist, not a journalist, but a broadcast journalist, we call ourselves, you know how to do the research. You know how to get the information. And I went into court, and of course he had an attorney. I had no one, but I had that letter. And so I just happened to say to the judge, "Judge, I have this letter. Can I read it?" And of course his attorney objected to it. The judge said, "No, I read it, and the case was over." And he had to pay a fine, and plus the fact that he had to do community service, da 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 da. And I think that was the first case under a bias law that had just been passed.
Right. That just been passed.
Yeah.
And you tested that law.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was your persistence and your savvy. But imagine parents when they don't know. And that was the Central Park Jogger parents. They didn't know.
Exactly. They have no idea.
And that's
they didn't
what,
know
when we were
But you know at the time if they were 16 they didn't have to be called, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Benita, as you know this, you know that people come in and they think that justice, you know, that justice, they're right and wrong, and that's justice. And they don't know justice is green.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You don't have money.
Exactly.
And you don't have
regrettably,
attorneys.
And then oftentimes it's still, you know, it's not as colorblind as people think sometimes, which is you know, which is regrettable. And you know, unfortunately, and like you said, green. Unfortunately, economics. You know, the ability to hire a lawyer or to just have some sophistication as to the system certainly comes into play. And you saw that, as you said, in that Central Park jogging case, the Central Park Five. That's a study in law school. I mean, if you look at that and you look at the police tactics and the fact that they lied to these guys and lied to them and say, look, you know, we found fingerprints on the clothing and, you know, all of the tactics that they were using on these kids.
Yeah.
And their parents, as you said, were oblivious to this and didn't know what to do. But, you know, I mean, when you consider that they were from our neighborhood, like I said, I grew up on 117th Street. They were on 110 Schaumburg Project. I mean, you knew who these people were. You know, they were regular, you know, people, working-class people. So there was this lack of sophistication that obviously bombarded them and their kids. And, you know, they ended up serving time for a crime that they did not commit. I mean, so it's just really atrocious.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, listen, Anna, thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay.
It was a delight and a pleasure to talk to you both.
I can hear you all day long. This is great.
Yeah.
It's so educational.
Yeah, it is. And, Anna, listen, you know, we're going to be talking because everybody, I think that what's going to be happening is that you just may hear Anna and I and another friend of ours, you know, probably doing another show. We're going to be talking to Ty Washington, who is the CEO of GoPro Radio Network right here in this city where we are, you know, in Jersey City. And I'm so proud of this young company. They have every kind of social media or equipment. And believe me, I am so challenged with when I look at the equipment here. I said, what the heck is that, you know?
You know, that's what makes it so exciting, you young people.
Yeah,
Benitez, you guys, you make me excited.
Well, I appreciate
the,
that.
The occupiers, the entrepreneurial spirit that you guys have. You don't have our work ethic because we inherited our parents' work ethic.
Yeah.
You know, we paved the way, but you guys run away with it.
Run away with it, aren't they?
It just makes me amazingly happy to know.
You're giving everybody the impression that Wilfredo is so much younger or something.
No,
well, I am.
He is.
Sure. I was 26 at the time in the Central Park Jogger, but hey, I'm still real young. Keep going.
Well, certainly younger than I am, because I'm in my 60s.
I appreciate
60s,
that.
So.
I'm a happy 49-year-old black Puerto Rican attorney. I love it.
Anyway, this is Anna. I'll talk to you again.
Yeah.
For calling in. And I'm going to be continuing with Wilfredo Benitez here on Political Roundtable. Thank you for calling in. Junius Williams probably got something that had come up. I knew his schedule is also very busy. So, Wilfredo, thanks for calling in. And Eric.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Pretty busy. And, you know, we definitely wanted to, you know, put not an end, but we're going to be continuing Political Roundtable. You know, we always have some dynamite issues anyway. So we're going to be talking to you again next week at the same time. Yes, Wilfredo?
Yeah, absolutely. Look forward to it. I can't wait. I love these issues. I love the topics. I mean, I think you're doing a great job, and I certainly can attest to the great work that Mr. Washington and his organization are doing and the opportunity that they're providing for people like myself and obviously yourself. So this is great, and can't wait to do it next week.
Oh, yeah. You know one thing? You know, I was just reading in the paper. Do you know one thing that the Republicans are trying to deny people on welfare the right to vote? Do you know that?
It's amazing. I mean, I did not see that, so I won't comment on it. But other than say that if it's true, I mean, I'm not surprised, but I can't imagine something like that. Someone actually doing that.
That's paper right in front of me. It's, you know, it's just ridiculous.
It's just so ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
The punishment.
I mean, well, you see that they're still fighting the president on things, and you know, he clearly has a mandate. And they're still fighting him on issues that
they
really should be non-issues.
A punishment for being poor. That's exactly what they're doing. They're trying to deny people on welfare the right to vote. This doesn't make any sense. But anyway,
Do you see that article on Cory Booker and his living
is
a week
legal,
on food?
By the way, is that legal what he did?
What do you mean, like with the food stamps?
He was in city council, and then he got his own person in, I think. Tell me about that.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's legal or not. I'm not so sure that the ploy, although, you know, I mean, I know Cory Booker, great guy, and I know that he's trying to bring light to the situation. But people on food stamps, I just don't know if I don't know. I just have a hard time with that.
He must be. No, he's trying to get press. Come on.
Well, yeah. I mean, I just, again, I would like to think that he's really, as he said, trying to draw attention to this and, you know, and maybe, you know, go back to some of the Republicans seem to think that, you know, Obama got into office because, you know, people need services. And, of course, you know, it's just shameful. I just hope that rather than do these gimmicks or tricks to get press, that we actually do help people and try to lift them up and get them out of the you know, out of poverty, you know, like giving them jobs and a good education and, you know, let them take it from there.
Yeah, that's extremely important. Maybe we can get, you know, the mayor on the show one of these days. I'm quite sure if I
know. I would love to have Corey on this. He's great.
Okay, well, we're
going love it.
Do that. We're going to try to do that, you know, and get that all straightened away. And also, I want to say that, you know, with Anna being on, you know, what we're going to be trying to do, Wilfredo, too, is, you know, broadcasting from different places. In New York, maybe.
Oh, that'd be great.
In Jersey, you know, since the show originates in Journey in Jersey, and mainly Vonda's Kitchen. You know.
Oh wow, that'd be great.
You know, in New York, the food is incredible and the atmosphere is incredible, and we're going to be trying very hard to do that. So I want people to know that, and also we're going to be talking about a lot of other hot button issues, you know, as we go along. And this has been Kay Thompson, and on the phone with Wilfredo Benitez, attorney.
Thank you again for having me.
New Jersey. Thank you so much. Okay. And
thank you. Have a good night.
Okay, you too. We have just about 2 minutes left. I'm Kay Thompson, and I want to tell you just a few things. What we're going to be doing in the future, we're going to be talking to, you know, a number of different people. Of course, Wayne Gilman is going to be coming back, and we hope to, you know, be talking about Bob Slade and Bob Pickett. and you know, about what's going on with them. And Professor James Small, by the way, and I think that he has just come back, or if he hasn't, he will be calling me about you know, his his African travels. We're looking for Dr. Len Jeffries. I've talked to him, and you know, hopefully that he will be coming on. I'm quite sure he will be. And I'm looking for Dr. Ben. I'm looking for Dr. Ben, and as soon as I can get to Dr. Ben, you know, I can tell you that I will be doing another interview with him if I can. I'm Kay Thompson. Join us again next week for The Kay Thompson Show.
Said the 1% to the 99. Resist is futile. It's all love. You're just occupying your time. Said the 99% to the 1%. Public enemy.
Never.